They don't focus on what matters more, the power of how. We'll talk a lot about how. For now, just know that as you follow the right routine and gain a small, even very small, measure of skill, your motivation grows, your confidence grows, and your happiness grows. And those qualities make it easy to keep following the right routine, to keep improving, to keep gaining skill and confidence and motivation, because you will have earned those feelings. And in time, you will become whatever it is you set out to be. So, yeah, while I love Tony, fuck firewalks. Chapter 2. The greater your focus, the lower your chances of success. Let's say an initial spark, or kind of hot coal, did manage to get you started. Why didn't you keep going? Why didn't the power of activity, of getting started, of breaking a sweat, fuel the motivation you needed to keep going? Your process may have been at fault. Following a process that doesn't yield short-term results, much less long-term results, is incredibly demotivating. We'll talk about that in upcoming chapters. But you also may have fallen prey to the myth of focus, which says that the only way to be a high achiever is to regularly remind, coerce, and torture yourself into putting forth effort. Let's take a step back. Did you get to work on time today? Did you get the kids to their activities on time? Did you get dinner on the table and cut the grass and do the laundry and all the other stuff you needed to do? Of course you did. Why? You didn't really have a choice. Choices present a huge obstacle to meeting our objectives. They deplete our willpower to pick long-term gratification over short-term gratification. As Dr. Travis Bradbury, author of Emotional Intelligence 2.0, writes, even though we don't always realize it, as the day goes on, we have increased difficulty exerting self-control and focusing on our work. As self-control wears out, we feel tired and find tasks to be more difficult, and our mood sours. Having too many choices is also a problem. In a classic study, psychologists Sheena Iyengar and Mark Lepper set up a display table with 24 varieties of gourmet jam at an upscale food market. Those who sampled the spreads received a coupon for $1 off any jam. On another day, shoppers saw a similar table, except that only 6 varieties of jam were on display. The large display attracted more interest than the small one, but when the time came to purchase, people who had seen the large display were 1/10 as likely to buy as people who had seen the small display. Choices are a problem because choices force you to decide what you want to do. What happens when you turn "I want to" into "I have to"? You make it to work on time. Punctuality is non-negotiable. Getting to work on time is not a goal, it's a task. So is making dinner. You have no choice. So is taking care of your kids. It's non-negotiable. Going to the gym, on the other hand, is a goal. We may want to work out, but we don't have to work out. You don't make it to the gym because you can negotiate, if only with yourself, and make other choices. That's why the power of routine, something we'll look at in detail later, is so important. When you create a routine, embrace that routine, and see the results of that routine, you stop negotiating with yourself. You see your routine as a task, in the best possible way. Your routine isn't something you choose to do, it's just what you do. And you stop making choices that don't support your goals. Best of all, you stop having to look back and wonder why you didn't follow through on your plans and why you're still stuck in the same place you've always been. To reach a goal, don't focus on the goal. Let's use me as an example again. I'm the poster child for lessons learned and cautionary tales. I love setting huge goals. Unfortunately, my huge goals don't always love me back. In my 20s, I thought it would be cool to run a marathon. I didn't have a burning desire to be a runner. I just imagined all the admiring glances I'd receive when I regaled people with my New York City marathon stories. The first day of training, I jogged about 2 miles. The next day, I jogged 2 more. The third day was really hot. I tweaked my ankle when I sidestepped a chihuahua with an attitude, and after I finally limped home, I plopped down on the front steps of my house and thought, crap, I can barely run 2 miles. How will I ever run 26 miles? That's impossible. And I gave up. Of course, you could say I quit because my goal didn't have sufficient personal meaning. And in some ways, you would be right. It's really hard to overcome challenges and setbacks when you don't care enough. Or worse, when what you care most about is what other people will think. But caring, though important, is rarely sufficient. Millions of people sincerely care about their careers or their health or their families or the environment or politics or a social cause, and yet they still give up long before they manage to achieve a meaningful goal. Instead, the main problem with setting a huge goal lies much less with caring and much more in two simple words: here and there. The distance from here, where you start, to there, where you someday want to be, is too great, especially at the beginning. For example, if your goal is to lose 40 pounds and this week you managed to lose only 1 pound, how defeating is that? The distance from here to there is too great. If your goal is to save $1 million for retirement and this month you managed to save only $100, how defeating is that? The distance from here to there is too great. If your goal is to go back to school and change careers and you've managed to complete only one class toward a degree, how defeating is that? The distance from here to there is too great. The distance between your dream and the stark reality of your present is incredibly demoralizing. No wonder you give up on that goal. Unfortunately, it's a cycle I've repeated more than a few times. So for gosh sakes, don't always keep your goal in mind. Thinking about goals is like thinking about winning the lottery. You get to dream big and imagine yourself living a totally different life. Dreams are really important. They make us human. We dare to set nearly impossible goals. Yet all those imaginings are worthless without a process to help us achieve them. A dream, once born, quickly dies without a process to support it. Then a dream turns into a regret, and all of us already have too many of those. The key is to set a goal. Use it as a target that helps you create a plan for achieving it, and then do your best to forget all about that goal. As I learned from James Clear, a leading thinker on the subject, the best use of a goal is to inform the process you will follow to achieve it. What's the difference between a goal and a process? If you're a manager, your goal is to develop your employees. Your process is how you identify areas for improvement, create implementation plans, follow through on training and coaching and feedback. Your process is what you do to make your goal happen. If you're a teacher, your goal is to help your students reach their potential. Your process is how you craft your lectures, create slides and ancillary materials, find ways to motivate individual students. Your process is what you do to make your goal happen. If you're a parent, your goal is to raise healthy, happy kids. Your process is how you build your children's self-confidence and self-esteem. nurture their dreams, instill important values. Your process is what you do to make your goal happen. Take Arnold Schwarzenegger. Before he became a movie star and later the governor of California, Arnold was a 6-time Mr. Olympia, the highest achievement in bodybuilding. As a teenager, he decided he wanted to win the Mr. Olympia contest, but on a daily basis, he cared only about reps. In his mind, each repetition of an exercise took him one step closer to becoming Mr. Olympia. At the gym, he wasn't focused on winning the contest. He cared only about doing the reps, about doing the work, about doing what was necessary to get him to his goal. Sure, he wanted to become Mr. Olympia. He set that goal. And then he forgot that goal and focused on reps and reps and more reps. Everyone has goals. The people who actually achieve their goals create routines. They build systems. They consistently take the steps that in time will ensure they reach their ultimate goal. They don't wish. They don't hope. They just do what their plan says, consistently and without fail. They forget the goal and focus solely on the process. We'll talk a lot, and I do mean a lot, about processes later on. And definitely don't worry about SMART goals. The main point of this chapter is to debunk the idea that maintaining a laser focus on your end goal is both motivating and a requirement for eventual success. But there's another goal-setting premise that also gets in your way, especially if you're trying to accomplish a major goal. Conventional wisdom and a boatload of books and articles say we should establish SMART goals. Every goal should be specific, meaningful, attainable, realistic, and time-bound. I'm cool with specific. Every goal should be specific. How will you know you've arrived if you never knew where you were going? And how will you follow the right process to get there? Meaningful is a problem. No goal can be made meaningful. A goal either has meaning or it doesn't. The more you work to find or contrive or manufacture some sense of meaning, the less likely you are to achieve the goal. It's impossible to find the meaning in a particular goal. While sometimes it does happen, if you're really lucky, that a meaningful goal finds you, most of the time, the meaning in a goal is the result of immersing yourself in a routine and a set of tasks. Just as you gain motivation from small, repeated successes, you also find meaning in those successes. Time-bound is also a problem. Setting a date for completion is important, but it in no way helps you focus. Most goals tend to make an already complicated life even more complicated. Think about the last time you wrote a list of business or personal goals. When you finished, did you think, wow, this is awesome because I have a clear direction and purpose? Or did you think, oh crap, how will I ever get all this done? I'm guessing you thought the latter. If not right away, certainly after a day or two. Attainable is also a problem. There's nothing inspiring about an attainable goal. Attainable goals are targets, not goals. I will cold call 20 prospects today is a target. Just pick up the phone 20 times and you meet the target. That may be an important goal if it helps you meet your sales quotas, but it's far from inspirational. Think of it this way. Your boss tells you to finish a report by noon. That's specific, meaningful, well, kind of, attainable, and time-bound. Your boss has provided most of the important aspects of a great goal, but anything your boss asks you to do is a task, not a goal. Only you can set a goal, and then only you can forget about that goal. Successful people forget about the goal. If you've ever felt overwhelmed by a huge physical task and broken it down into small parts, you know it works. Maybe you were hiking and realized you had 3 miles to go before you reached the summit, and you decided to just focus on making it to the next turn on the trail, and then the next, and then the next. In essence, you forgot about the goal and broke it down into smaller steps. Or maybe you were painting your house and realized you had 7 rooms to go, and you decided to just focus on painting this wall, then the next wall. Or maybe you had to create a 70-page sales proposal and decided to just focus on completing one section at a time and then work on the next section. In each case, the distance from here to there seemed so great that you decided to forget about the end goal and just focus on the process. It worked. And it will work again. What should you do? It's easy. Dream big. Set a huge goal. Commit to your huge goal. Create a process that ensures you can reach your goal. Then forget about your huge goal and work your process instead. Make this your mantra where goals are concerned. I will set it, and then I will forget it. Take my example of the marathon, a goal that appears on thousands of bucket lists. To actually run a marathon, you will someday need to run a little over 26 miles. But if you're just starting out, you don't need to run that far today. Once you set your goal, create a process that will help you reach that goal. Remember, the main purpose of a goal is to establish the right process and routine to achieve that goal. Say you aren't in particularly good shape, so your process calls for you to run 1 mile on the first day. While today you can't run a marathon, you can run 1 mile. And because running that mile today is all you need to accomplish, you automatically feel good about yourself. You did exactly what you set out to do, and that motivates you to run again tomorrow. At some point, your process might require you to run 1.5 miles. Will running farther be more difficult? Sure, you can do it. If you've run a mile a day for a couple of weeks, trust me, you will be able to run 1.5 miles. And after you do, you will naturally feel good about yourself all over again. Plus, compared with where you started, you've already improved. And improvement feels awesome, too. Compared with running 26 miles, being able to run only 1.5 miles feels anything but awesome. But who cares? Right now, you aren't focused on 26 miles. You don't have to get to there. You have to care only about today. Because of that, your huge goal is no longer important. Your process is important. And where your process is concerned, you're a success. On certain days during the following week, you may have to run farther, or you may not. What you need to do depends on the routine you have established. Either way, what matters is not how you currently compare with your eventual goal. What matters is that you consistently work your process and do what you set out to do each and every day. If you dedicate yourself to working your process, you will make progress. Success is inevitable. And one day, you'll wake up and realize you can run 5 miles, and then 10, and then 20, because each day you compared yourself with what you needed to achieve that day, instead of with what you needed to achieve someday. Follow your process, and someday you will run that marathon. You will have gone from here to there, almost without thinking about there. And somehow, almost magically, you will have stayed motivated and enthusiastic. How did that happen? Forgetting your goal unleashes the power of feedback and motivation. 2 essential truths. None of us receives enough positive feedback. Each of us is our own worst critic. Feedback is based primarily on some form of comparison. If your boss says, you did a great job, An implicit comparison is at play. Compared with a standard, spoken or unspoken, you performed relatively well. Not relatively as in somewhat, but relatively as in compared with a standard. The same is true when you give yourself feedback. In effect, you compare what you just did with what you expect of yourself. But you will never be happy with what you see if you're measuring yourself against your eventual goal. You won't stack up. You can't stack up. And you will feel terrible about yourself. Focus on the process, though, and every day that you stick to your routine, you will feel good about yourself. For example, if you planned to eat 3 healthy meals today, and you did eat 3 healthy meals, awesome. You deserve to feel great, and that sense of fulfillment will motivate you to take the long walk you plan for tomorrow. If you planned to save $200 this month, and you did save $200, awesome. You deserve to pat yourself on the back, and that feeling of accomplishment will motivate you to save the $220 you plan to save next month. If you plan to finish 1 class this semester, and you not only did so but also got an A in the class, double awesome. You deserve to feel proud, and your success will motivate you to complete the 2 classes you plan to take next semester. Lose 40 pounds? Forget it, at least for now. Save $1 million? Forget it, at least for now. Earn a bachelor's degree? Forget it, at least for now. Those are your goals. You set them, but for now, you must forget them, because you will never be able to give yourself positive feedback when you constantly compare yourself with your end goal. You will always be your worst critic because, by definition, you will never measure up. And in time, you will give up. The work will be too hard and the rewards too few. That's why you need to forget the goal. What matters is the process. If your process is one designed to get you where you eventually want to go, all you have to do is work your process. And sticking with your process is so much easier. When you create that self-reinforcing feedback loop of success leads to motivation, leads to more success, leads to more motivation, leads to more success. That's the way I got one of my huge goals to actually love me back. How I got more than just my mom to read my ink posts. If the first rule of Fight Club is you do not talk about Fight Club, the first rule of ghostwriting is you do not talk about your clients. In my case, that's certainly true. I sign non-disclosure agreements so restrictive, my firstborn child may as well be pledged as surety. That's the nature of the business. But it's challenging to market yourself when you can't talk about the great projects you've completed or the notable clients you've worked for. So I started writing for Inc.com in order to have published work appearing in my name on a highly reputable platform. That way potential clients may read it and think, I really like that. And hey, he's a ghostwriter. I need a ghostwriter. Then I realized I could get paid for writing for Inc. If I committed to publishing a certain number of posts a month, they would pay me a flat fee for each post. It wasn't a lot, but because I was willing to write for free, I saw free advertising as the pro quo for that particular quid, any money I earned would be gravy. Then I realized I could get paid a lot for writing for Inc., as long as I was incredibly successful. Instead of being paid on a per-post basis, I could be paid by number of page views generated. The more views, the more I would make. Keep in mind, each view was worth only 0.0095 cents. In other words, I would earn $9.50 per 1,000 views. To make serious money, I would have to generate serious views. Monthly compensation was capped at $10,000, which translated to 1,050,000 views. And to date, no one had ever capped out. The more I thought about it, the less it made sense for me to choose to be paid by the post. Taking a flat fee was the conservative approach and would limit my potential compensation. Why not bet on myself? So that became my huge goal. Generate 1,050,000 page views a month, even though I was starting at zero. I had limited success early on. For the first few weeks, most of my posts did fewer than 1,000 page views. Depressing? Yeah. The distance from here, a handful of page views, to there, over 1,000,000 page views, seemed impossible to cross. So I forgot about my huge goal. I focused on what I could control, what I did every day. After a little experimentation and a lot of thought, I settled on a process. Because the internet never sleeps, here's what I did every day. 1. Write a new post. Without fail, no excuses. 2. Build relationships. I contacted 3 people who tweeted my posts that day, choosing the 3 who seemed most influential, the most noteworthy, the most something, even if that something was just thoughtful comment. Then I sent an email, not a tweet, and said, thanks. My goal was to make a genuine connection. 3. Build my network. I contacted 1 person who might be a great source for a future post. I aimed high. CEOs, founders, entrepreneur celebrities, people with instant credibility and engaged followings. Many didn't respond, but some did, and some have become friends and appear in this book. 4. Add 3 more items to my list of great headlines. Headlines make or break posts. A great post with a terrible headline will not get read. So I worked hard to learn what worked for other people and to adapt their techniques for my own use. 5. Evaluate recent results. I looked at page views. I looked at shares and likes and tweets. I tried to figure out what readers responded to, what readers cared about. Writing for a big audience has little to do with pleasing yourself and everything to do with pleasing an audience. And the only way to know what worked was to know the audience. 6. Ignore my editor. I liked my editor, but I didn't want her input because she knew only what worked for columnists who were read by a maximum of 300,000 people each month. My goal was to triple that, which meant I needed to do things differently. We occasionally disagreed, and early on I lost some of those battles. Once my numbers started to climb, I won a lot more often, until eventually I was able to do my own thing. Sounds simple, right? In a way it was, because I followed a self-reinforcing process. Posting frequently allowed me to improve my skills more quickly, increase my chances of writing home-run posts that would go viral, and, not incidentally, build a library of posts for new readers to someday discover. Building connections provided an ever-expanding list of great content sources. Experimenting frequently with headlines allowed me to quickly learn to craft better headlines, and eventually I developed my own style, which was widely copied, so I've had to constantly adapt, but that's okay. The more I posted and connected and experimented, the more data points I could evaluate, and the better I could understand what readers responded to, which led to more and more people reading my posts. How many more? The first month, I did just over 35,000 page views. Ugh. But I kept my head down and stuck with the process. The next month, I did nearly 100,000. Cool. The next month, I did over 300,000. Very cool. The next month, I did nearly 900,000 page views. Very, very cool. The fifth month, one of my posts was the most shared post on LinkedIn, and that month, I did 2.1 million page views. And for the last couple of years, I've averaged over 1.5 million views a month. From a day-to-day point of view, nothing had changed. I still followed the same process. But what had changed was my results, and to some extent, me. Following my process had helped me develop the skills, the strategies, and, just as important, the confidence and perseverance required to reach my huge goal. Still, you may be thinking, okay, getting lots of page views is impressive, but is that really a huge goal? Maybe not. In a moment, we'll look at how one person used the power of process to reach a once-in-a-generation achievement. But first, let's look at how you can accomplish a goal that isn't practical or numbers-based, but one that most of us definitely hope to achieve, being more likable. Believe it or not, there is a process for building great relationships. No one has enough friends. I definitely don't. And if that's not reason enough to be likable, we tend to do business and build professional relationships with people we like. We're instinctively drawn to people who are modest, agreeable, polite, kind. In short, to people who are genuinely likable. So hey, if you don't want to be more likable just for the sake of building more and better relationships, it's also good business, you type A, nose-to-the-grindstone, ladder-climbing high-achiever you. But how do people decide whether they like you, especially once they've gotten to know you a little better? The answer often lies in what likable people don't do. So here's a checklist. The next time you're heading out to a social gathering or networking event or any situation where you'll interact with people in a relatively casual setting, review this list. See it as your checklist of things not to do. Again, the key isn't to think, I want people to like me. That is your goal, but forget about your goal and just follow the process. 1. Don't talk a lot. I know that sounds odd, because friendly people tend to be gregarious and outgoing, and there's certainly nothing wrong with that, but there's a big difference between friendly and likable. Likable people already know what they know. They want to know what other people know. They ask questions. They ask for details. They care about what other people think, and they show it by listening. That makes the people they meet feel important. It makes the people they meet feel likable, as well they should, because they are. And it makes the people they meet like them for making them feel that way. 2. Don't blame. Friends make mistakes. Employees don't meet expectations. Vendors don't deliver on time. It's easy to blame other people for our problems. But we are also to blame. Maybe we didn't provide enough training. Maybe we didn't build in enough of a buffer. Maybe we asked for too much too soon. Taking responsibility when things go wrong instead of blaming others isn't masochistic. It's empowering. Because then we focus on doing things better or smarter the next time. And when we get better or smarter, we're also more likable. As long as we also... 3. Don't try to impress. No one likes us for our clothes, our cars, our possessions, our titles, or our accomplishments. Those are all things. People may like our things, but that doesn't mean they like us. Sure, superficially, they might seem to, but superficial is also insubstantial, and a relationship that is not based on substance is not a real relationship. The only way to form genuine relationships is to stop trying to impress and start being yourself. 4. Don't interrupt. Interrupting isn't just rude. When we interrupt someone, what we're really saying is, I'm listening to you not so I can understand what you're saying. I'm listening to you so I can decide what I want to say. Want people to like you? Listen to what they say. Focus on what they say. Ask questions to make sure you understand what they say. They'll love you for it, and you'll love how that makes you feel. 5. Don't control. At work, you may be the boss. You may be in charge. The buck may stop with you. Everywhere else, the only thing you really control is you. People who try to control other people, tell them what they should do, what they should think, what they should feel, have decided that their goals, their dreams, or even just their opinions are more important than everyone else's. People like people who help. Don't tell someone else what to do. Ask them how you can help them do what they want to do. They won't just like you for it. They'll love you for it. 6. Don't preach. People who criticize also tend to preach and judge. The higher you rise and the more you accomplish, the more likely you are to think you know everything and to tell people everything you think you know. When you speak with more finality than foundation, people may hear you, but they don't listen. Want to be instantly likable? Be the person who has accomplished very cool things, but manages to make other people feel like they are the ones who have accomplished very cool things. 7. Don't dwell on the past. The past is valuable. We should all learn from our mistakes. And then we should let our mistakes go. Easier said than done. It depends on your focus. When something bad happens to you, see that as a chance to learn something you didn't know. When another person makes a mistake, see that as an opportunity to be kind, forgiving, and understanding. The past is just training. It doesn't define you. Think about what went wrong, but only in terms of how you will make sure the next time you will get it right. Optimism. Rational, reasoned, justifiable optimism is contagious and very, very likable. Try it. If you want to make new friends or to make better friends, don't focus on that goal. Focus on following the process above. You'll meet more people and have conversations that are more substantive than superficial. You'll give more people a chance to share who they really are, which gives you the chance to decide whether they are someone you want to play a bigger part in your life. On the flip side, you will instantly be more likable, which will attract people to you. And ultimately, you will build better relationships because the process ensures your attention is placed on other people, not on yourself. Your goal, building more and better relationships, won't get you there. Becoming more likable will get you there. Process will get you there. Even if you want to accomplish something almost unimaginable. The power of forgetting a huge goal. How Jerry Seinfeld became the Jerry Seinfeld. Imagine you want to be a comedian. That means you need material. Lots and lots of material. You can't perform the same act year after year. You constantly need new jokes, new insights, new stories. In much the same way that Domino's isn't in the pizza business, it's in the delivery business. Comedians aren't really in the performing business, they're in the writing business. If Domino's can't deliver consistently, its pizzas are irrelevant. If comedians can't write consistently, their performing is irrelevant. Now, imagine you're a young Jerry Seinfeld. And imagine that, although you never say it out loud, you dream of being a comedian. And somehow you realize that the way to be a better comic is to write better jokes. And that the only way to write better jokes is to write every day. Wait for inspiration? Nope. Wait for lightning to strike? Nope. Waiting accomplishes nothing. You need to write each and every day. So you get a large wall calendar, one that shows the entire year. You hang it in a place you can't miss it. And every day, once you've accomplished your task, remember your task isn't to become a great comedian. Your task is to write new material. You put a red X over that date. After a few days, Seinfeld told Brad Isaac, you'll have a chain Just keep at it and the chain will grow longer every day. You'll like seeing that chain, especially when you get a few weeks under your belt. Your only job is to not break the chain. Your only job is to not break the chain. Seinfeld didn't focus on his ultimate goal. He didn't focus on becoming a headlining comedian. He didn't focus on developing an iconic hit TV series. He didn't focus on earning, according to Forbes, $267 million in 1 year. Want to be your own version of Jerry Seinfeld? Keep checking off those boxes. Within a few days, you'll start to embrace those small successes. Within a few weeks, you won't be able to imagine doing things differently. And one day, you'll look up and realize that here has gotten a lot closer to there than you ever imagined possible. If you follow the right process, that is. Chapter 3. Your goal must always choose your process. Later in this book, I'll lay out strategies to enjoy, sometimes even love, the things you need to do to succeed. It's amazing how your perspective will change when you see results. For now, though, let's start with what you need to do in order to succeed. Let's use our example of walking the Appalachian Trail. Create a plan to walk 12 miles a day. Stick to that plan, and 180-odd days later, you will achieve your goal. Or, let's say you want to lose 40 pounds. Create a plan to consume 300 fewer calories than you burn every day. Stick to that plan. And 466 days later, you will achieve your goal. Focusing on the 40 pounds or the 466 days it takes to lose them is a perfect example of how horrifyingly huge a goal can be when you're just getting started. Let's say you want to write a book. Create a plan to write 1,000 words a day. Stick to that plan. And 70 to 80 days later, depending on how long-winded you are, you will achieve your goal. How do you think I wrote this book? If I had started every day by thinking, I need to write a book, I would have quit early on. Instead, I started each day knowing, for example, that today I will write the section on how not sharing your goals with other people can actually make you more likely to succeed. I didn't worry about the total word count. I used the Seinfeld technique. My goal was to channel my inner Fleetwood Mac and never break the chain. I worried only about what I needed to do each day. That's why, where your process is concerned, you don't get to choose what you want to do. You get to choose your goal, but after that, what you want to do is irrelevant. What matters is what you need to do to achieve your goal. You can't have dessert with every meal and lose weight. Well, theoretically you can, but geez, that will be hard. You can't complete a triathlon without doing an awful lot of running, biking, and swimming. Well, theoretically you can, as long as they give you a week to complete the race. You can't get promoted without outworking everyone around you. Well, theoretically you can, but don't you want to earn the job instead of politicking your way in? So don't start unless you're truly willing to pay the price. How to create a successful process. You might be tempted to skip this section. Don't. Process is everything. And maybe just as important, creating a successful process is hugely motivating in and of itself. By the time you've mapped out your process, you'll be incredibly motivated to get started. If you struggle with procrastination, the boost of motivation you will feel from successfully creating a successful process, I know that sounds cheesy, but it's true, will leave you itching to get started. Seriously, try it. Then tell me I'm wrong. That's what successes, no matter how small, do for you. Now, here are the steps for creating a successful process. 1. Set your goal. To make it easy, let's say you've decided to run a marathon. I use the word easy because it's challenging to design a routine to develop a niche skill. Fortunately for this goal, training plans are easy to come by. Google train for a marathon and you'll instantly get dozens of results, some for beginners, some for intermediate runners, etc. 2. Set aside decision anxiety and choose a reasonably promising routine. For now, just pick a process that fits your current fitness level. Don't worry about which training program is best, especially because you have no way of knowing which program is best for you. In this case, looking for the best not only is a time-wasting rabbit hole, but also automatically ensures you'll begin to second-guess the plan you picked the instant your training gets difficult. So just pick a plan, trusting that any plan that ranks highly in search results found its way there for a reason. Then, 3. If necessary, customize your process to be extremely specific. Writing, "Go jogging 3 days this week" on a post-it doesn't mean you have a process. What does go jogging mean? And which days will you run? How far? How fast? Instead of "go jogging," here's what your process should look like. Monday, run 1.5 miles. Tuesday, stretch. List the different stretches for 20 minutes. Wednesday, run 2 miles. Thursday, walk at a pace of 3 miles per hour for 45 minutes. Friday, a good process tells you precisely what you need to accomplish at every step along the way. That way you know exactly what to do, and you know when you have actually accomplished what you need to do. Say your goal is to increase your client base. Cold call 3 prospects is a specific, actionable plan. If your goal is to get promoted, volunteer for a cross-departmental improvement team is a specific, actionable plan. If you're seeking a degree, study for 2 hours and take a practice test is a specific, actionable plan. Setting a clear and specific target for each day's effort automatically supports feedback. Either you did what you planned to do, great, or you didn't. Boo. 4. Rework your schedule. Training for a marathon involves a significant amount of running, especially as you get in better shape and build the strength and endurance needed to achieve your goal. Plus, you may need to perform strength and flexibility exercises on a regular basis. All your training will naturally take time, and freeing up that time means changing your current routine. Maybe you'll stop lifting weights. Maybe you'll start getting up earlier. Maybe you'll decide you can no longer keep up with the Kardashians. No matter what, some things, maybe a lot of things, will have to change. I reworked my entire daily, weekly, and monthly schedules, writing, speaking, consulting, exercise, family time, you name it, in order to write this book. Lots of things had to change. How could they not? Look at the process you created and determine what changes you need to make to your current daily routine so you can reliably work that process. If you don't, you will never succeed. 5. Map out your daily plan. This is the easy part. Just take the training plan you found and put it on a calendar. For example, your first week might look like this. Sunday, 30-minute walk. Monday, rest. Tuesday, 1.5-mile run. Wednesday, 3-mile run. Thursday, 1.5-mile run. Friday, rest. Saturday, 3-mile run. Then, sense check your plan against your new daily routine to make sure it works. 6. Work the process. Maybe that first 3-mile run was too hard and you had to walk some portion of it. That's okay. Just make sure you complete the 3 miles. More important, don't compare yourself with other people. Don't worry about whether you're as fast as your neighbor. You probably won't be. Don't worry about whether you're as fit as you were in high school. You definitely won't be. The only thing that matters is that you can check off the box beside each day's activity. That's the only comparison you care about. And when you do check off each box, take a second to congratulate yourself. At this point, consistently working the plan is the only performance standard that matters. But just because you set specific goals doesn't mean you should murder anyone to see them through. If you plan to run 3 miles and halfway into the run you feel a twinge in your hamstring, don't push through the pain. Cut your run short. While you didn't run 3 miles, you did go for your run, and you haven't risked injuring yourself. Even though there will always be small setbacks, as long as you don't miss your scheduled runs, you will get in better shape over the long term. So, if you do feel that twinge and let discretion be the better part of valor, you get to feel twice as good about yourself. You didn't miss your workout, and you made a smart short-term decision that supports your long-term goal. Win-win. 7. Fix your schedule problems. No matter how hard you tried to predict the future, your reworked schedule probably didn't always work in practice. Trading off a few household responsibilities may not have worked. Leaving work early to get to the gym may not have always worked. Something won't work. And when that happens, what usually gives first? Your new process. Instead of giving up, fix whatever schedule problems have arisen. There is always a way. Just keep in mind that sometimes you may have to go for a run at 11 o'clock p.m. or bring work home or get up early to finish that project because you don't miss workouts and you don't let coworkers down and you don't let opportunities slip away. More on that in a moment. 8. Your results may vary, so adapt accordingly. But don't make changes to your process because you're tired or lazy or bored. Make changes because those changes increase your likelihood of ultimate success. For example, most people need greater time to recover from exercise as they age. Our bodies don't recover as quickly from high-intensity or long-duration workouts. So, when I was training to ride a Gran Fondo, my initial plan, created by Jeremiah Bishop, a world-class cyclist, and a guy I definitely wasn't going to argue with, specified 3 rest days each week. After a month, we decided to experiment. I rode 6 days a week for several weeks. To our surprise, my endurance and speed increased more quickly than under the original plan. Now I know why. According to tests I've taken, my capacity to recover from exercise is relatively high. Ultimately, recovery is specific to the individual, just as people respond to physical or psychological stress differently. Athletes respond differently to different recovery strategies. I do better with less rest. Other people do better with more. But I didn't know that when I started. I couldn't know that when I started. And neither can you. Always wait until you can evaluate real results before you modify your process. Don't assume you somehow know better. Let the data show you what is better. If you're paying attention, it will. Want another example? In the next section, we'll look at one that millions of people can relate to and, I hope, benefit from. But keep in mind that the following is just an example. Maybe you aren't trying to lose weight. That's okay. What I lay out is a daily checklist. For some people, weekly schedules work best. That way they can adapt and adjust slightly as necessary in order to stay on track. For others, a daily checklist works best. They want to know exactly what they will do now, then next. Following a daily checklist is the best way to stay perfectly on track. Which is right for you? If you're new to the process of following a process, use a daily checklist. That way, each time you tick off a box, you get that immediate rush of feedback from success, and you'll be excited about ticking off the next box. Want to lose 10 pounds in 30 days? You can. Get 2,000 people in a room and at least half will say they'd like to lose a little weight. Get 2,000 hard-charging, go-getting type A personalities in a room, and many of them will say they'd like to lose weight fast. So, while I was surprised, I probably shouldn't have been. The organizer of the business conference had hustled over right before I went on stage. The speaker, scheduled to appear after me, couldn't make it because his flight had been delayed. "Can you go another 45 minutes to fill the time?" he asked. "Maybe do a Q&A? I'm not a huge fan of mass question-and-answer sessions, because many questions tend to be hyper-specific to the individual, and the answers, therefore, totally boring to the group. So, I finished my presentation and asked the audience to suggest topics. The AV guy posted their submissions on the giant screen behind me, and I had the audience vote by applause for their favorite topic. Which subject won? Not raising capital, not finding investors, not leading better or hiring smarter or harnessing the creative power of employees. Nope. This was the overwhelming favorite. How can I lose 10 pounds in 1 month? As I said, maybe I shouldn't have been surprised. Millions of people have tried and failed to lose weight. Before we start, I'm not a nutritionist. I'm not a certified exercise professional. I have no official credentials. Yet I know that the following works because in less than a month I went from 172 to 161 pounds. Here's what I shared. My success was not based solely on the program or its details. I didn't come up with a trendy new diet, didn't find some magic way to trick my body into losing weight, didn't find some groundbreaking new strategy that made weight loss effortless, because all that stuff is just feel-good, happy horse shit. Yep, I'm a Southern boy. My success was based on creating a process I knew would allow me to achieve my goal as long as I followed that process. I didn't wish. I didn't hope. I didn't look for the easy way. The easy way never works. I built an effective plan. And once I did, success was inevitable. All I had to do was stick to the plan. I set it. I used it to inform my process. And then I forgot it and focused each day solely on what I had to do that day in order to work the plan. Here goes. 1. Start with a fast day. I'm normally not a fast cleanse kind of guy, but drinking only clear liquids for 24 hours is a great way to hit the reset button on your normal habits. I combined my start day with a scheduled colonoscopy. Hey, why not double dip? Wait, that didn't sound so great. Plus, some experts claim that an occasional fast is good for you. Best of all, your stomach will shrink, and when you do start eating again, you'll feel full more quickly and therefore will eat less. Just stop eating at, 8 o'clock p.m. tonight. Drink only clear liquids tomorrow, and start back up with a healthy breakfast the following day. Think you can't go a day without eating? You can. It's not that hard. And you'll probably lose a pound in the process, which gets you off to a nice mental start. 2. Exercise first thing every morning. Yes, Saturdays and Sundays too, but you don't have to exercise for long. 20 minutes of moderate cardio is enough. You'll get your day off to a great start. You'll be less likely to overeat later, because you'll know overeating means you wasted some of the effort you put in. And studies show that 20 minutes of exercise improves your mood for up to 12 hours. Win, win, win. 3. Eat 4 almonds 15 minutes before every meal. I'm sure there's science behind this, but here's what I know. I'm always less hungry and therefore eat less when I have 4 almonds 15 minutes before a meal. Plus, a little healthy fat is good for you. 4. Drink a glass of water right before every meal. 1. Drinking more water is good for you. 2. You'll partly fill your stomach and will feel full faster. 5. Always stop eating the moment you start to feel full. We tend to eat for taste, which means we eat past the point of feeling full, and that's one reason we put on weight. Pay attention to your body's signals and stop eating as soon as it's telling you you're full. When you eat too quickly, that full signal will reach your brain after you're actually full. To help the process along, eat slower than you normally do.